Savior, may I learn to love thee, walk the path that thou hast shown. Pause to help and lift another, finding strength beyond my own.
Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories Podcast and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at GayMormonStories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
Hello, Gay Mormon Stories listeners. This is Kevin Klusterman, and I am guest hosting Gay Mormon Stories today. Daniel Parkinson has asked me to do a podcast with someone that I have been dying to interview for a long time. His name is Adam White, and he is currently the president of the Understanding Same Gender Attraction group at BYU. And so we are really pleased to have him on the program. Hello, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Kevin. Thanks.
It's really great to have you on Gay Mormon Stories, and great to have you on board here with our listeners. Adam, tell us a little bit about what life was like for you growing up. Where were you born? Tell us a little bit about your story in Mormon Stories tradition. Where were you born, and what was it like growing up for you in the church?
Yeah, sure. So I was born in Fresno, California. Both of my parents are LDS. My mother is a convert. She was baptized in the church when she encountered Mormon missionaries in college. And my dad was in the military for a time when I was a young child. So I spent a lot of time moving around from community to community, ward to ward. Kind of on either coast. I was either on the West Coast, somewhere in California, or we were in Maryland or Virginia. Really, really wonderful childhood. I had the best time with my family. I have one younger brother, and we've always gotten along really, really well. I really, really enjoyed church as a kid. I loved primary. I loved sacrament meeting. I was that really weird young kid that would actually pay attention and eat his goldfish, and I really loved the stories that I learned, and I also gained a deep appreciation for Mormonism's belief in a personal relationship with our heavenly parents. As a kid, I was fascinated with this idea that God could actually speak to us, that that He would actually reach out to us and use words to communicate His will to us, and I was so passionate about that as a kid, and really threw myself into church. I think that is where I was the most comfortable. I'll be honest, when I was a young kid and I was going through school, I was very introverted. I was very shy. Having moved around a lot, my dad being in the military and all, you learn very quickly that, you know, you're not going to keep these friends you're with for very long. So so why invest that much in the relationship? So as cynical as it sounds, I mean, that's how you learn to protect yourself as a child. So I really enthusiastically went into my studies, and I mean, whatever studies elementary school and middle school kids have, really enjoyed those, and really enjoyed my passion for the gospel.
It must have been nice, you know, with the traveling, to have the continuity and the constancy of the church in your life.
Absolutely. I mean, that is what I could come back to. I could always come back to church. I could always come back to school. And just the potential of learning something new, the potential of doing things right as well. I was very appreciative of learning in primary and I guess also into young men's. Here's kind of a list of the things that you need to be doing. And if you're doing these things, you will be all right by God, and God will be by your side. And that was definitely a constant source of assurance as a young child. Yes.
Great. So when did you start recognizing your orientation, and how, what was that like in the church?
Yeah, so I think the national average, though it's not coming to my coming to me right now, is much younger than this. I think I started to first really come to grips that with being a gay Mormon male at the age of 17, and I attribute this to a variety of things. I mean, with the background that I did have of moving around a lot and yeah, kind of finding myself and growing into myself in both the church community and as an introverted school kid, I take a lot of pride in the work that I involve myself in. And I think involving myself in many, many projects, in many, many endeavors in both school and in church kept me away from myself, if that makes sense. I didn't have to approach this growing dissonance inside me as my friends and my peers started to develop romantic and emotional relationships with people of the opposite sex. I definitely came to this place in high school where I was just kind of waiting for the day. It sounds kind of silly, but I've heard similar stories of gay individuals kind of waking up in the morning and wondering, oh, is today going to be that day? You know, is today going to be that day where I start being a normal hormonal teenager that chases girls? And
so for you, it's a little on the later side here, because I think, you know, I was reading some of John DeLynn's work, who's doing a lot of work with his dissertation in this area. And I think he was saying that it's around 13 or 14 when a lot of gay kids start to either come out or recognize their orientation. So for you, you know, really throwing yourself into school, into church, and it's not till 17 till you start to recognize some your orientation.
It's true. I was that golden boy in the ward, you know, the one who was the bishop's assistant, the one who did his Eagle Scout, the guy who was who did pretty much everything in school besides like student government and sports.
Okay.
So super involved in the arts, musical instruments, choir, theater, whatever I could really get my hands on. And I think, and yet there was still that longing for some sort of romantic relationship in high school. That's part of the high school story, right? Is to have that special someone. And also just feeling that pressure from my peers. You know, everyone was dating, and at the age of 17, you know, your Mormon friends are even dating, you know, like you're no longer weird because you were the only ones not dating till 16.
Yeah.
So this is just a part of the high school culture. And with that, I decided to date a really good friend of mine. And me and her were together for a couple of years in high school, for junior and senior year. And it was wonderful to have her, you know, to have that person to go out with and to talk to about pretty much anything. She was such a good friend of mine, best friend, really, at the time. And yet, the growing dissonance that I was talking about earlier, behind everything, feeling like I wasn't on the same page sometimes with maybe how she was feeling about me, and also just starting to feel this panic of, you know, all of these signs, all of these all of the different markers, I guess, in a relationship, holding hands, first kiss, and all these things seemed to have the same emotional import to me as did to her.
What did it feel like for you?
I think there was both a sense of relief that I had done it once, you know, like I had made it. I had a girlfriend in high school. I was doing everything like my friends were. This was obviously meaningful to our relationship. So I felt really good about that. At the same time, there was a sense of disappointment, like the question of, is this really it? You know, is this really what everyone has been, freaking out about since we hit puberty, you know? And is this what, is this really it? All of these stories of romance and love that you grow up as a Saturday cartoon and Disney child, you know, this is really what everybody's singing about. Yeah. How disorienting and how confusing it was for me.
Yeah. So you probably, perhaps you question, is it me? Is it her? Is it, you know, so what? Did that start to be a factor in you recognizing your orientation?
Yeah. I mean, gosh, like I commend everybody who dealt with my back and forth in high school. The straight A student, very talented at all the many different things that I was doing, right? And yet for some reason, my personal life, I would flip back and forth on people, or just, I didn't seem to be emotionally connected to anything. I think that panic meant to me that I really couldn't hold on to any of these bonds that I was forming or trying to form. It was a very confusing time. So I ended up trying to break up with my girlfriend several different times, feeling absolutely awful about it, using that phrase, you know, it's not you, it's me. but really though, like, I don't know how, well, you know, that's complicated, isn't it? Because in reality, it is me not recognizing my sexual orientation, but it is also you, because I'm not attracted to you in that way. It definitely felt, you know, that there was that best friend wall. You know, there was like that was as far as we could go, and we could deepen that relationship and that bond as best friends. But romantic interest
just
I
didn't
was
work.
Really panicking. I didn't know where that was. I didn't know if I was even capable of that. And I was starting to get to that place where I was like, well, maybe I'm just not a romantic person, and maybe that's just not going to be my experience.
Uh-huh.
You know, and trying to reconcile with that. And this is where, and it was in that piece, and starting to try to figure that out. Is romance a part of my experience? Where I discovered the words and the language that described what I was feeling. You know, that the word gay did describe me, and that my romantic and emotional needs were directed towards men.
Yeah,
and I think. And looking back, I mean, I can look at the different pieces now and point them out with clarity, whereas in high school, I probably would have never seen these things. But I was incredibly defensive of my sexuality through my elementary school, middle school, high school years. As a kid, you know, I had a wonderful childhood and very supportive parents of every endeavor I really wanted to get into. And yet there was always that check. There was always that check to make sure that I wasn't being too effeminate, or I wasn't choosing to do effeminate things or things that were stereotyped as such. I think the first time I wanted to do like band or any sort of art, it was like ballet and like the flute. And that was, and I don't think, and it made my parents uneasy. I mean, they didn't say, you know, those are bad things for you to be involved in, but they raised the question, like, do you really want to do that?
They
seem to do that, you know? So
they gave some gentle redirection to you.
There was.
Okay.
There was. And I think I learned very quickly to then check myself. So whenever anyone, I mean, whether it was in, you know, the traumatic experience of being in PE when you're an awkward teenager, going through that, or just anything really, being involved in the activities I was, people questioning my sexuality or joking or even saying things that maybe weren't even meant to question my sexuality, but taking them that way, I was incredibly, incredibly afraid of anyone thinking me anything other than straight, because that's what I was. I was a Mormon boy. What else could I be? I couldn't be anything else but a heterosexual male. And I also recognize in high school that there were many times that people said things to me, or my friends who were guys had said things to me, and it just meant the world to me, these relationships. And I didn't recognize it at the time. I had great friends in the theater who were just really kind to me and would reach out to me, and how much I really appreciated that. funny story, I mean, really small story. I had a friend once, we were finishing up doing whatever marching band drills we were doing, and he just told me, he was like, Adam, if I was gay, I would date you. And it was one of those things, I was like over the moon about that. I was laughing about it. I was thinking about it a lot the whole day, and it just made my day. And now I look at back at it and go, I just want to tell my younger self, well, that's because, you know, like, you liked him. You're gay, and that's okay, you know?
Yeah.
But those are the things you don't realize. And it wasn't till I was prompted by a conversation I was having with my girlfriend and a good friend of ours. We were sitting over lunch and talking over lunch, and I had said something. I had said something that apparently was very stereotypically gay, and they had a good laugh about it, and I was feeling pretty sad. I was feeling pretty mortified that that happened, and we were texting each other later, and I asked that question. I was like, well, what if I am? What if I am gay? And, you know, we kind of laughed it off and didn't really think about it too much after that. But at that time, that's when I really started to think about it, and I really started to piece everything together. At the same time as this, things started getting a little bit more complicated in my life, mostly because I started developing this sleep problem. I had started developing a kind of like a minor sleepwalking thing.
Really?
Going on. Really? Yeah. And it was really troubling. I mean, here I am. I'm a high school senior. The plan is to go to college for a year and then go on my mission. That's what the Mormon guys do, right?
Right.
And
right.
I had developed this thing, and I was super worried about it. I don't know all of the different details of what keeps you from going on a mission, but I was deeply afraid that this would be something that would keep me from going on a mission. And I graduated from high school with these kind of thoughts of, okay, so here's this bit of me being gay, maybe. It's kind of a maybe. And also the sleep thing. And I just kind of went, you know, I'm going to enjoy the rest of the time I have here at home with my girlfriend, with all of my friends. We're going to have a good time, and then I'm going to go to school, and it's not going to be a problem. Which was kind of silly.
No,
I kind of deny and push it on to BYU. But this was in 2009, and my first semester at school, as was very typical, as what I had done before in my life, I kind of piled everything on. You know, I took about 17 credits. I got involved in the theater program, adjusting to life away from home, and also questioning my sexuality. Things were super overwhelming. Sleeping problem did not go away at all. And I came out of that semester with some really good friends. With some friends I would have for the rest of my undergraduate career, but also very depressed and very anxious because nothing was going right. I was very confused about my sexual orientation, what that meant, and with this thing that I was just so scared was going to keep me away from going on a mission.
Yeah, so you have almost a double whammy here. You're concerned about your orientation, and then the sleepwalking thing, you're wondering if that's going to be a factor in
right.
being able to go on a mission. Had you, you know, obviously this, the orientation issue is emerging. Had you talked to your parents or your family members about that before you went to BYU?
No, I didn't talk to my parents. I didn't talk to my brother. I had kind of sort of mentioned it to my girlfriend because we were, you know, we were close, and it would come up every once in a while that, you know, that I was kind of sad or confused about, okay, so what about my sexuality? Why is this so hard, or why is this so different for me? And we'd have that conversation every once in a while, but I had never talked about it with anybody else. I wouldn't say I distrusted my bishop or I distrusted any of my ecclesiastical leaders. It's more of I just didn't know what to do with them, because I learned very, very quickly that bringing private issues to them kind of led to this cycle of just shaming. This, I don't know how to say it, discovers sexuality or just encounters, you know, like accidentally encounters pornography on the internet. It's mortified, tells his bishop, you know, ends up not being able to pass the sacrament for like a week or two, and then misses the ward temple trip or like young men's temple trip. And, you know, because you have been deemed unworthy
Right.
I had several experiences like that as a kid where, you know, I confessed every single last thing to my bishop, and it just kept me away from all of those experiences. And after a while, I just kind of got fed up with it. I was like, well, this whole process of what I understand repentance to be like is really not helping me, and it's really making me feel more alone. I just never trusted my bishop with ever telling anything like that, because what kind of worms would that open up if I said something like that, you know?
Yeah, I think I see where you're coming from. So in engaging with your ecclesiastical leaders, your bishops, you're confessing every little thing.
Yeah.
And...
Well, I mean, you're told to, you know, like that's kind of, I don't know. I think all of my friends learned very quickly, like learned a lot quicker than I did. You actually don't confess all that much to your bishop unless it's super, super serious. But no one ever actually says that in school, in Sunday school, because how silly would that be? You know, you actually don't, no one tells you where that line is. So as a super, like, as someone who deeply valued being right and wanted to be right on the right side of everything, you know, like, it was just a part of...
You were just being honest. You were being honest. And yeah. In your honesty, as you were confessing, what you found is that there were situations where you were being restricted by your bishop on occasion.
Yeah.
And obviously that on these smaller areas. And so you said to yourself, oh my gosh, if I'm being restricted in these small areas, I don't know that I can trust talking with the bishop about a large thing like orientation, because that could go pretty poorly. Is that about right as far
yeah,
as
you think? Yeah, and I mean, my first bishop at BYU, I mean, I kind of threw this bit in there, you know, that I was confused, and I was in this place where I was like, I don't know what to do with, you know, what I'm figuring out about my sexuality and everything. And I was sent to, I don't even know what they call it at the counseling center. It was given to the bishops as kind of a sexual addiction group. So, and I went
because
I
was like, well, maybe this recovery group.
I don't know. I think, I mean, to be incredibly blunt, it was kind of like a masturbation and pornography group, you know?
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I don't know what this is going to do for me, but like everyone was super nice in there, and we had these really interesting discussions, and there were other gay people in there. Like there were gay people in there, which I think they were just referred to this group because it had to do with sexuality.
Wow.
And their bishop sent them to it, you know?
Okay. Wow. So bishops, at least this one bishop at BYU and probably others, there's a therapeutic culture that we're going to lump in folks who are gay into an addiction group for masturbation, pornography, and we're going to consider that all kind of sexual, outside the norm, kind of straight and narrow path, and get these people some help.
Yeah, I mean, and I think I wonder about it now, just simply because I think everyone in that place was also kind of mixing these issues together, you know?
Yeah.
That my sexuality is somehow tied into my pornography use, is somehow tied into the amount of times I masturbate, or if I masturbate at all. Like, it was all, you know, tangled up.
Which we know has been a thread in,
yes,
in the LDS church, you know, coming from the miracle of forgiveness, which kind of said, hey, if you masturbate, then, you know, that's going to cause you to be gay.
That's going to lead to homosexuality.
Yeah.
Yep. So, I honestly, too, I question, you know, using this group to recommend confused or vulnerable gay people. You know, like
sure.
I don't think that is really maybe a solution for many people. But I did appreciate being in that group and being with people who were also very confused and hurt because they wanted to be on the right side. You know, they wanted to be doing the right thing. And the therapists in the group were very good at kind of de-escalating the situation for everybody. asking the questions, challenging our assumptions about ourselves and our habits. And so it definitely gave me the tools to sit back and go, okay, should I be in school right now? Is that what I really need, or do I need to sort some things out? Because I am confused, I am stressed, I am depressed, and maybe I need to go. So I am grateful for that bishop for sending me in that direction, even if and looking back, it's, you know, it's not a gay group, you know, gayness, homosexuality is not a masturbation or a pornography issue.
Right. So you received some good things out of it. You're taking a balanced perspective on it and seeing how it wasn't a good fit for you, but on the other hand, it led to some positive things for you as well.
And really, after much thought, I decided to go home, and it confused a lot of people. And it was a very hard time because everyone was, you know, like, oh, so you're back to go on your mission, or having achieved so much in school, there was definitely the sense of don't peter out now, don't give up. You know, there was definitely this sense of you are pulling yourself off the track, and if you don't get back on, you're going to be left behind in I don't know whatever it is everybody is afraid of.
So what was that conversation like with your parents, where you're saying, hey, I'm coming home. There's some things going on that are not working so well here, and I got to figure things out. What was that like with your parents?
Yeah. So, I mean, they did not understand fully what was happening, but they did. They heard in the urgency and this and the way I was expressing myself that I needed some help, and they knew that I was having that I had these really deep concerns about going on a mission. You know, they were aware that I wasn't sleeping well, and that there were things going on, and they didn't quite completely grasp what was going on, but they were willing to be there and they were willing to help. So
you're still at that point. You're still not. They don't know.
No, we're not even touching the issue of homosexuality yet.
Okay.
And so I go home and we get me a therapist, I think through Family Services.
LDS
Family Services.
Yeah.
I think. We get me a psychiatrist. I start working part time. People are scratching their heads as to why I'm home, but they're not really asking questions. Fortunately, they kind of just had this mindset of, you know, oh, it's Adam, you know, like he had his, you know, ducks in a row in high school. So I'm sure he's just, you know, doing whatever it is he needs to do to go on to that next great thing, which I was totally willing to roll with at that point, you know, feeling very broken and very confused. I didn't want anybody to come near what was going on in my life. I also had a ton of time to think at this point. And while getting all of the sleeping issues and everything sorted out with therapists, I started to poke around the internet for gay Mormons. I remember just plugging in gay Mormon into the search engine to see what would come up. And that's when I found this thriving community of Mormon LGBT bloggers. At this time, Facebook groups were just, they were really new. No one was using them very much. And the blogs were huge. And this is how everyone was finding each other and having conversations about what it's like to be Mormon and LGBT. And I was able to take this year I spent out of school kind of sorting through everyone's experiences and going, okay, this matches my experience. This doesn't. I still want to be in the church, but I really appreciate this perspective somebody has who's not believing anymore, but still identifies as Mormon. What does it mean to identify as Mormon if you don't believe? And start wading through all of this information, and I guess not even gay stuff even, but starting to like take a deep look at my faith, its history, and where we've been as a faith. And it was fascinating, and it was filling in me like I was thirsting for this, and I could not have enough of anything that had to do with Mormonism and with the LDS LGBT experience.
Okay, so the internet is this remarkable thing, and you are coming home, you're sorting things through, and you start reading these blogs and Facebook groups and people's stories about being gay, about being gay and Mormon, about your Mormon faith. And so this is starting to put some pieces together for you.
It is, to the point where I am finally ready to talk to somebody. And I start bringing it up with my therapist. We start chatting. And I was the first gay person he ever had, I think.
You were his first.
I was his first. And with that, I got sent to another, like, sexual addiction group.
Oh, no.
I went through several of these.
Oh, no.
And again, though, it was a really nice experience to sit with people who were wondering about themselves, who desperately wanted to live by gospel standards, who wanted to be right before God, but who also had questions related to sexuality, sexual expression, and that kind of thing.
That was the good part.
That was a good part. I mean, looking back, I don't know. I laugh at it, but really, really, sex addiction groups are not good places for LGBT people.
No, the message is really quite horrendous. You know, it's saying because you have a different orientation, that must mean you have an addiction, and of course that's just totally bogus.
Yeah, it's complicated, and I just feel it inside me whenever I talk about it. It's just that, oh, but it's not that, you know.
But I appreciate you wanting to share kind of a balanced perspective, because you probably were able to connect with other people in those groups and gain some mm-hmm. some meaning and some understanding, and hopefully people were overall compassionate in there. But the overarching message is still we don't accept this.
Yeah, and that's really interesting that you bring that up, because I don't know if I ever believed it whenever I was in those groups. What I was finding out about myself, and I think it was very helpful to read other people's stories at this time, because others identifying their LGBTness as a gift or as a part of their experience or still experiencing God as gay people, I got really excited about that. And that excitement has never really left me. And I brought that into these spaces where these were sex addiction groups, sexual issues groups, and I could be very bright and very happy because I was approaching wholeness in all of this mess. All of this mess is of what we identify homosexuality as in the LDS Church. I was finding myself. Yeah, I guess that certainly colors my experience when it comes to how we talk about homosexuality in the church and in the groups that I've encountered. I did come to this place where eventually I felt I had followed the process of, you know, studying out something in your heart and pondering it well and then bringing it before God. Excuse me. And I decided I was in this place and in this middle of this year and in exile, as I sometimes refer to it, I brought it before my Heavenly Father, and I just asked, you know, I presented it more like I said, you know, I found this out about myself. I'm gay. Is that all right? Is that okay? And looking back on it, I never the words that I expected as a child, you know, have never come to me. God has never spoken to me in sentences, in language, I guess, the way we speak to each other. But in this moment of asking God about my sexual orientation, I truly, truly felt love, peace, wholeness, acceptance. It was a very exquisite feeling. And yet there was no there was no pressure or no direction given necessarily. There was no, you are gay now, go and do this, this, and this about it. It was more of, yes, and I love you, you know?
Love and acceptance.
It was. It was that. And just this thrill of finally finding the pieces, that I had finally found the pieces that I needed to make this picture of me that finally made sense. All of the different disconnects, all of the rambling and all of the confusion that I was explaining to you in the last part of this, in the last part of this podcast, it all fell into place and the story started to make sense, a little bit more sense to me.
That must have been exciting for you.
And I really couldn't contain it. I kind of came into this place where, you know, I started my own blog. I started blogging about my experiences. Blog's not up anymore now, but it was, and I started reaching out to all these people that I'd been lurking on their sites and reading everything about their lives, because the internet does that to all of us. And I started, I started having conversations with people and throwing in my two cents, and that was just wonderful, because that's how I met the people who would bring me to USGA.
You know what it almost reminds me of, and you're a young guy, certainly compared to me, but there used to be this old movie of The First Vision. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but you know, if you're 43 years old like I am, you know it pretty well. And it really fits with your deep and abiding attachment to personal revelation. It reminds me of Joseph Smith in that movie going into the sacred grove, and then he has that experience, and then he is just running out of the sacred grove, and he's so pumped and enthused and excited. And your story reminds me of that in some ways, that as you have this spiritual experience, it's almost like a sacred grove experience for you, where you put pieces together. It's a feeling of love and wholeness, and you're running out of there, and you're a different person in some ways. I mean, it changed you in some ways.
It really did. And I really appreciate you bringing it up, because the story of Joseph Smith and his willingness to bring those difficult questions to God and receiving an answer is a story that still continues to ground me in Mormonism. I have a very, very strong belief in personal revelation. And it's that story, the story of Joseph Smith and the story of Jesus Christ's miracles, that really sustained me in this process. Because I'm going to pull back a little bit and maybe explain some other things real quick. I had had these moments before in my life where things seemed to flip overnight. Any of my high school friends listening to this would laugh at this, but I had this experience in the theater as a high school student. And we were putting on the musical Jekyll and Hyde in high school.
I had no idea Jekyll and Hyde was a musical.
It is. Frank Wildhorn, good man, good music. And I was the music director for this show. And it was the first, like, real chance for me to, like, delve in and just really, like, sink my teeth into something I just really, really, truly love, and just run with it and run with it with my friends. And I just went crazy during this time period. I don't even remember most of it. And all I remember is I would come to, like, school in, like, these pajamas and, like, this, like, blazer, like this really weird velvet blazer. Like, I was a really weird person at this point. And I'm very happy that my friends stuck with me through all of it. But cutting story short, the musical went really well. The music was wonderful. I was privileged to be in a cast with very talented people, and directing them was incredibly, it couldn't have been easier, I think. And it was interesting coming out of that experience. I was a much more, my friends tell me I came out of my shell, basically. I have friends tell me that I was never the same after that point, which is funny because it was Jekyll and Hyde. So I guess that's poetic. But definitely in this piece, I there was a part of me then, and it's part of my memories, part of my story, that hard things, that doing hard things, and not only doing hard things, but doing hard things related or completely wrapped in the things that you love, bring you to new places, bring you into new realms of you, I guess. And so coming back to this coming out story, and coming out to me, I was just enthused to have that opportunity again. I was very passionate about my belief that God loved me and that I was gay, and I was super excited to just be that and to live that. And that sleeping problem piece that I was talking about, the moment that I accepted my sexuality for what it was and myself for who I am, it melted away. I didn't have any problems anymore. And that's really where that overnight switch, the miracles element comes in for me, because my accepting being gay for me personally literally made me whole and took away the fears and the things that were distressing me most, which just underlines for me the incredible importance of being affirming of one's sexuality and being affirming of one's faith, because it was my mental and emotional health that was really on the line here all along.
So this change really, I mean, you talk about being whole, which is something very consistent when I hear these stories, is that after this experience and after you have felt like God has accepted you as a gay man and you have accepted yourself, that changes the whole picture for you. You are becoming whole spiritually, physically, emotionally, mentally, in all these aspects, whereas before, where there was confusion and dissonance and, you know, those conflictual and guarded feelings and thoughts, you know, this was seriously affecting your mental health, your physical health, your spiritual health, all those things. So what a great time and a great moment for you, a big turning point.
It absolutely was. I mean, not to discredit any of the wonderful things that had happened to me through my life up to that point. But this was definitely kind of that next step for me, that line upon line, I guess. Yeah, reaching a new place with new goals and new things to wonder about, which I was excited to wonder about, because being in the Mormon blogging community especially can be a very critical, and sometimes very blunt, but also a very thoughtful community as well. And I was really, really loving just kind of the language and the conventions people used in their blogs. And so it kind of became a way for me to approach my faith and approach my sexuality, to be questioning, to be challenging, and to be always be wondering, you know, what is the best way? What is the right way? But maybe with a little bit more, I don't know how to say it. Lenience doesn't seem right. Flexibility seems kind of weird too. But maybe with a little bit more play, I guess. Mm. A willingness to explore than I'd previously tried.
So as you blog, you know, you're kind of going public here. So you must have opened up to your family. What was that like?
That piece comes in a little bit later, actually.
It comes later after the blogging.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I've been blogging, and at that point, everyone was using a pseudonym. So I had my own, and I made very sure that no one would ever really truly figure out who I was from this.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And really, everyone at this point was. There's so many gay Mormon bloggers now that even BYU students that are using their real name, and that really hadn't even crossed anybody's mind or seemed stupid at
that time.
This is like what? This is like the end of 2010. So this is like 2 years ago.
Not that long ago at all.
No.
A lot's changed. I mean,
has changed.
Not just with you personally, but just in the entire world, really.
I think the environment is more open.
All right. So you're blogging. When do you come out to your parents? I want to hear.
Yeah.
About
that. I discovered USGA. I come back to school in winter 2011, just feeling better about life. Still kind of up in the air on the mission.
Okay.
I've been thinking through this whole time, if I sort this step out, I'll go on a mission. However, you know, reading all of these stories that kind of people who are on the fringes of Mormonism, so to speak, the mission was more complicated, for me. From like, you know, being a gay Mormon and as whether, you know, it was safe for me to be on a mission or even if I would be welcome on a mission. But also faith questions too. Was it right for me to bring people to Mormonism when I had my own questions that needed answering? So my friends that I've discovered on this, by blogging and who are also at BYU invite me to come to USGA. USGA had started while I was at home. In fall 2010, a group of students got together and decided that they wanted to meet and talk about LGBT Mormon issues openly and honestly in the daylight, no fake names. And they brought this to the administration, and the administration allowed them kind of an unofficial space in the university. They were kind of going classroom to classroom, week to week.
Which is absolutely huge. I mean,
it is.
You know, if you don't grow up Mormon and if you don't know BYU, it seems like kind of a simple little thing, but that's huge, right?
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, we're talking university that has a very, very dark past when it comes to homosexuality. Through the course of being a leader for USGA and meeting people who have, you know, since graduated from BYU, there's been so many groups that have tried to form on campus, and the results have been people getting kicked out of school, people being reported, witch hunts. We're talking that the only real way that gay people could meet is kind of in this anonymous, hidden away from sight, kind of a clandestine kind of thing, which for some was good and they met good friends and good support, and for others turned into really terrible experiences. So the fact that we could have USGA, this group of friends, knowing some of them, they're very persuasive people, and they made their case and they made it well. And I don't think anyone really suspected that this would grow at all. You know, like it would just be this group of people and it'd be the 12 of them, and it really wouldn't go on to be what it is now, I guess. And they would just talk about like LDS publications on homosexuality, different talks, different devotionals, the different pamphlets that are out, I guess. And I was kind of in this second wave of people coming to USGA. In 2011, me and several others joined, and we pretty much doubled the ranks of USGA that first night then. And I just remember the first time I went to USGA, I was so nervous because here I was. I had developed my own gay identity, and I was about to, like, encounter other gay people. And I don't think I ever, like, questioned, like, oh, am I gonna get this whole gay thing wrong? You know, like, am I doing this wrong? You know, I don't know if that was like a real anxiety of mine, but I was also super terrified of like interacting with people who had gone through what I had. And not only that, but also people that now I recognize that I have a romantic or emotional potential with, you know, like all the different pieces of going through adolescence were starting to make sense. And everything up to this point, not to say that I was ready to, you know, like jump into bed with anybody, but up to this point, the law of chastity lessons really didn't like mean anything to me. I was like, cool, I can like hang out with girls. I'm not going to do anything. Like, it's stupid that we're even having this conversation every single week, you know? But at this point, everything started to make sense. You know, like, whoa, okay, so this is what it means to kind of set my boundaries. This is what it means to, that's what these standards, that's what this whole language that we have between young men's and young women's means.
Wow.
I don't know if that makes sense.
That
everything
totally
started falling
sense.
Into place for me.
Yeah, that totally okay. makes sense because, yeah, so you, law of chastity is not an issue with the girl in your position.
Yeah.
But now that you've accepted yourself, you've accepted your orientation, you're feeling good about it, you're in USGA, and now you're meeting other people who are gay, and there's potential for relationships.
And there's potential, and with that is responsibility,
yeah.
I think. And that
yeah.
was the piece that I was recognizing. You know,
yeah.
There are all these stereotypes of gay people that all that they're just these sex-craved deviants, and that was certainly not something, like, that was not my experience at all. I don't think it's any gay person's experience at all. And yet it was so cool, and I'm going to use that word, I guess, cool, to like sit there and go, oh, okay, I am a responsible human being. I am a human being with romantic, emotional, and sexual needs, and I can be in control of that. Like, that is mine, you know?
Good.
Like,
good.
I could own that.
Yeah.
Now.
You're looking at it from a responsibility standpoint, too, that you own that, you're responsible, and yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me where you're seeing that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not like obviously like thinking all of this all the way through my first USGA meeting, because that would be really weird too. But I like all these pieces were clicking into place underneath everything. All of these new experiences I was having, this is what was developing for me. And it was just so fun to sit there, because we finished our USGA meeting. I forget what it was about. I don't even remember what we were talking about. But we were all just sitting around chatting with each other and going, yeah, oh, yeah, no, I'm new. And then we like started talking about our coming out stories, where we are with the church and school and our faith. And everyone's just joking and laughing, and everyone's gay and they're happy about it. Like, it was just up to that point, I had felt very... In my first semester at BYU, I felt very lost in all the ways that I've described before, but I also never really felt like I found my home on campus, that I hadn't found the group of people that I would grow with throughout my college career. But in that moment at USGA, I found my home, and couple that with the excitement that I felt for having discovered this wholeness. I would never leave this. I would never go away from USGA. It was my sanctuary. It was the thing I looked forward to every week, because no matter what kind of crap I had to wade through at BYU as a gay man and recognizing kind of where I fit into this world, I had people I could come back to and understand me, and that was huge. And so now we're getting to the place where I start coming out to people. I had come out to a friend of mine from high school, who also came to BYU, and she, you know, has always been there for me, has always been just the best support, has always loved me, and really I did not expect that to change at all when I came out to her, and of course nothing did. It was wonderful, a good coming out experience for me. I came out to several other friends, girls mostly. I just felt safer doing that, I guess. Don't know what to do with that piece, but there it is. And then it was my cousin's wedding, and this sounds like it's going to be way more dramatic than it actually was, but it was my cousin's wedding. And so all of my family was in town, and this was at the end of my second semester at BYU. And I just felt like this is the time, this is when I'm going to tell everyone that I'm gay. Backed away from that really quickly after, you know, sitting in the temple reception room and then going to the reception afterwards. There was no way I could tell my parents that I was gay, while my cousin, who was the same age as me and we had been good friends all of our lives, was getting married in the temple. I have a feeling that would have been a very confusing and hurtful thing to grapple with at that time. So, hooray for being wise. I didn't do that. I did come out to my brother, though. I came out to him, and it is so I am very grateful. I guess I can say I'm very grateful to my heavenly parents, to God for this, really. But every single, well, my brother was prepared for me to come out because he had been talking to a good friend of both of ours in high school about his coming out experience. A good friend of ours came out to my brother. My brother talked about it with him and was really well prepared for what I had to say. And it really strengthened our bond as brothers. And we were able to share stories and share things with each other that we never really talked about before, deepened that relationship. And that is something I will always be grateful for. Over the summer, then, when I went home, is when I first told my mom. I had heard advice that you should come out to people when they can't escape, where there's nowhere for them to go and run away from the situation.
Make sure the audience is captive, then.
And I did. We were on a long drive, so jumping out of a car going 60 miles an hour was not
hopefully unlikely.
Something my mom could do. Yeah. So and it was just. It was really good because the moment I came out, I was just able to explain to her how complicated life was as a gay Mormon. It started off as a conversation as to why I might not want to go on a mission. And I think in that conversation, my mother recognized the gravity and the thought, the gravity of what it meant to be a gay Mormon, and just the amount of thought I was putting into this. And just how much she didn't understand. So her first reaction was just unconditional love, you know, just asking questions, talking about how much she loved me, and even kind of raising her own concerns with the church. For some reason, whenever I come out to people, that, you know, it just, there's just this new level of doubts and questions people feel like they can talk to you about. Which is nice, I guess. It's a wonderful thing to have, but it's also kind of funny what things end up coming out. And I didn't know it at the time, but my mom had also been prepared for me to come out because I had had my mom's best friend was my brother and I's nanny when we were busy traveling in the military and everything. This best friend, her name is Miss Debbie, and she was always there for all of the different things that I experienced in my childhood. And she later called me. This was months after I came out to my mom, to tell me that my mom had been talking to her, that my mom had questions about me being gay, but she didn't want to ask me because she didn't want to offend me. So she would ask Miss Debbie instead.
Uh-huh.
And then Miss Debbie would ask me the questions.
Okay.
and I wasn't, you know, and this wasn't something I was offended at or anything, but she told me in one of these conversations we had that there was this time when me and my brother, when we were really young kids, and her and my mom were making crafts with me and my brother. And my brother was so bored with it. Like he couldn't stand whatever activity it was we were doing. So he decided to just leave and go play with whatever toys he was interested in at the time. And yet here I was. I was really enjoying whatever craft thing we were doing. And I was just bubbly and laughing and just having a good time and joking with my mom and Miss Debbie, and I eventually, you know, got bored with it too, or got finished and left. But after that, my mom was very quiet, lost in thought. And Miss Debbie, recognizing this and knowing my mom very well, asked her, you know, what's going on? You know, what's the problem? And Miss Debbie told me that at that point, my mom asked the question, what if Adam's gay? What am I going to do?
How old were you at that time, approximately?
I would say I wasn't any older than 5 or 6.
Okay.
At that point.
Okay.
And my Miss Debbie, she just had the best answer. She just said, we love him for who he is. We always love him. And I get so emotional thinking about it, just simply because, I mean, I couldn't have asked for better, you know? I have always had people in my life who've looked out for me even before I was even thinking about any of this. So I was very fortunate with my brother and my mom and the experiences I had with them. And my dad and I, however, have never talked about this. We've never talked in person about me being gay.
Wait, to this day?
To this day, we have not talked in person about it.
Really?
Yeah. It's interesting. So I gradually came out on Facebook. I don't think I've ever done the whole I'm going to like announce to the world on Facebook. You know, that seems to be a very useful way for people to come out sometimes. But I guess it depends on what situation you're in. I didn't really do that. I think I just switched my like interested in or whatever that profile bit is, whatever it is that's about your sexual orientation on Facebook. I switched that one day and just left it alone. And then I just, you know, started posting things that were interesting to me. And I mean, I think there's some like real push to like, there was some end homophobia campaign that I was, you know, I was posting stuff from. And I got this really interesting email from my dad, basically saying, you know, like, you know, homophobia is bad, but we also need to recognize that, you know, gay people are doing sinful things when they're acting on their sexual orientation. And at that point, I was like, well, you know, I just told my dad, you know, well, I'm gay. Like, this is all over email. I'm gay, and this is kind of my experience. And look how cool this has all been, because I feel like I've found myself, and this is kind of some thoughts I've been having about this, and what about all this church history and all. And, you know, I was just talking about all these things that I've found. And that's when the volleys kind of started coming back and forth. We were writing back and forth to each other, talking past each other. I still have them in my mailbox. I don't like to look at them that often, in fact, at all. But I can't bring myself to delete the emails. And looking at it, I'd like to think that I was trying to engage in a conversation, really try to come to an understanding. And yet somehow this wasn't clicking. I think this was, from what I understand, from what other family members have told me, this was a very painful and hard experience for my father. And he eventually, I kind of shut down our conversation simply because it was an emotional risk for me to be involved with this. I was trying to do my schoolwork. I was trying to juggle everything in my life, and I couldn't be waiting every day for the next email to come simply to find out that I was still not being heard.
Sure. Why do you think it was so hard for him compared to your mom and your brother? Now, obviously, you know, you kind of say your mom and your brother were prepared and you're grateful for that. So that may be part of the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. Are there other aspects to why you think it was more difficult for your father?
I think, and I don't know the best way to describe this. I think the way, I don't know, I have never really had this conversation with my dad, but from what I've observed, and I guess I'll add that piece later, the way that he has found his peace and his strength in Mormonism is, I guess, I don't like these words I'm about to use, but finding a place in maybe a more orthodox belief in Mormonism, or maybe that these certain, that performing certain actions and checking off those boxes is what brings us peace and stability, and then asking any questions that challenge authority, that's subversive, that's something that you're not supposed to do. He has a very deep respect for the authority of the church, and he shows that by not questioning it or wondering about it. And I feel very uncomfortable with all these words I'm using, because it doesn't begin to describe just the wonderful service that my father has performed in all of the different functions he's served in the church. And he's so faithful, and I appreciate his testimony, and I love him and everything that he has taught me. The work ethic he has, the passion he has for the gospel are things that I admire and I try to emulate every day of my life. And yet the fact was, I just feel that his belief about homosexuality really truly came from that kind of miracle of forgiveness time of understanding homosexuality. I was very frustrated because here I was with them trying to reveal and express what I learned to my father, to a man I admire so much. And yet I felt like I was talking to the miracle of forgiveness. Like I was talking to those first couple of pages on homosexuality in there. And it was, I don't know, it's that conundrum that all this stumbling that I've been doing in the last couple of minutes here is something that I still grapple with every day, because I so have so much respect for my father and for his faith. And it's brought me where I am today. And yet at this point, the way we approach our questions and our devotion to the gospel seems to be coming from different places, or at least is perceived as such.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see the podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation today at gaymormonstories.org. Music for this podcast was graciously donated by Nabby Parkinson Folk and Ricky Parkinson. That thou hast shown, pause to help and lift another, finding strength beyond my own. Savior, may I learn to love thee.
Can't see. Ooh, who am I to?